Rust the film. In turmoil, its cop. Armorer Hannah. Guilty. A heavy thought. Manslaughter shadow. Tragic refrain. Echoes through the desert where justice wanes. J.K. Rowling. Ink and quill. Stalked by hatred. A twisted thrill. Police called upon. A dark affair. Her magic tales now fraught with care. Tony Gagnos, Porky's fame, his legend carved in celluloid flame. Meat and mischief, laughter's blend. Though he's gone, his legacy won't end. Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is the Red, White, and Rude podcast. This is your conservative, anti-woke take on pop culture. We encompass the entertainment world, whether it's music, TV, films, comedy, you name it, we cover it. Welcome, everyone. We've got a good show today. We will be covering the Rust Armorer. Was found guilty. No, not Alec Baldwin. J.K. Rowling's was turned into the police. Not physically, mind you. And a couple of quick hits. An infamous movie from my era as a teenager, Porky's, that made, gosh, hundreds, well, I don't want to say hundreds of millions, but it was a big monster hit off like a $3-5 million budget. One of the characters has passed on, and an interesting study was done many years ago, and it still holds true today, even despite social media and all the different ways we have what we call so-called friends. And I'll explain that as well. And that's our show today, so let's get to it. First of all, you can find us at grumblingsmedia.com, The Red, White, and Rude, as well as some of our other podcasts, which are still relevant. You can also find us on Rumble and YouTube under the moniker, the profile handle of Grumblings Media, as well as traditional podcast outlets in Google, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora. There you go, my friends. So let's get down to it. Okay, the Rust Armorer was found guilty. Her name is Hannah Gutierrez Reed, and she was the armor in the film Rust. Obviously, we all know about this because of Alec Baldwin murdering somebody, allegedly. She was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter for the accidental shooting death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins. You know, look, you don't want anybody dead or anybody to die. You know, all these people here are full-blown leftists. You know, let's get that straight. But still, nobody deserves to die off of sheer stupidity like this. So let's get into it a bit more in detail. First of all, for the people out there, the layman, what is an armorer? Armorers, weapons specialists, weapons handlers, weapons coordinators – our film crew specialists who work with property masters, directors, actors, stunt coordinators, and script supervisors. Weapons such as firearms, knives, swords, bows, and staff weapons are controlled by the weapons master. So I was talking to somebody. He said, look, an analogy, William, it's kind of like in the military. There's always somebody in the armory. There's always somebody in charge. Always somebody who's counting everything and knows where everything is at exactly. You know, I have gone to my partner, Big John, and I tried to be diplomatic about this. And then one day I said, screw it. Look, I said, you civilians suck. Y'all suck at security. You suck at supervision when compared to the military. If you screw up in the military, you lose your rank, which means pay, you get restricted to the command, and meaning you can be restricted like a prisoner for X amount of time. Not to mention the fact you just lost your rank, which means you're going to be getting paid less in the future, and you could be also dock pay as well. It's brutal. The ramifications and the discipline that go with it, with the in terms of responsibility, but more importantly, the accountability is night and day. This woman, this young lady, is paying for her stupidity. And because of her stupidity, somebody's dead. Now, I'm not saying this because Hollywood's woke, the movie's woke, as Alec Baldwin. It's just sheer stupidity. There was a show. I don't remember the name of it. When I start talking, I lay these podcasts out. I have great detailed outlines, but as I'm talking and telling the story, other incidents come. And there was a shooting back in the 80s. It was a show that dealt with a male model who was a spy. And it was a popular show. John Eric something is the individual who was in the show. And he was messing around on set, you know, put a gun to his head thinking it wasn't loaded, and shot himself, and he died of a brain injury days later. Let's ask a co-pilot here. What show from the 80s had a male model playing a spy, and he accidentally shot himself on set with a gun that the blank killed him? So now he had a blank in the gun, you know, and they said he always was always messing around on set. So he put it to his head thinking it was a blank, and it was, and boom. But what people don't realize is there's gunpowder. I mean, there's a little action there. It's not a bullet, but within the gun, and what blows out is it can kill you, obviously. And it did give me the answer. His name was John Eric Hexum. And the show was called Cover Up. I remember it was one of the shows my dad and I watched because we were spy buffs. It was the air, you know, we didn't have cable, we didn't have streaming, we didn't have any of that. We had Showtime and HBO. Showtime came after HBO. HBO dominated. And James Bond was still big. Movies were still at a point when the big blockbuster came out, the world went out to see it. So everybody loves James Bond. And that's what this, you know, that's kind of how they presented him as, you know, that type of spy, good looking, gets a woman. He was a good looking guy. And he died because of that accident. And you can go look it up. It was an incident where a young man died because of his stupidity, you know. But again, also the stupidity of those on set in the military. You always account for that. So when somebody's on watch, they go to the army, they pick up their gun. It's accounted for. Right afterwards, they turn it in. I mean, there's never a time where somebody doesn't know where that gun is at or who's handling it and the responsibilities that come with it. That's not done, as we see in this one too, this example too. You know, the armorer should go, "You're done with the gun, let me have it." Well, you know, just it's not a bleeping toy. But they don't do that. They're intimidated. I'm going to sidestep here again. Doesn't have to do with guns, but intimidation. In the military, when you take a watch, you have to account for all the secret materials, whether it's confidential or the top secret, because you're underway, wartime scenario or not, peacetime or not, doesn't matter. There's a process. The captain had taken a publication out of the controlled area where it could not leave, period. Nobody challenged him. So I came on and I said, "Bro, I can't take this watch over until we get that publication back in here where it's supposed to be." No, not even the watch officer wanted to help me. So I got my guy who worked for me, because that was my job. I had completely revamped and repaired the NWP library, which is the library of all the secret materials, confidential materials, stuff like that. And so I went down, and to make a long story short, he was in a different part of the ship. We went to that part of the ship, knocked on it, beat it. People did not want to let me in because, you know, we're enlisted. We're always messing with each other. They thought I was messing with them. And then I just started to kick the hell out of the door. And then they got mad, and they didn't realize I was serious. And they went and told the captain. Captain called me in, had the pub right there in his hand. Finally, to make the long story short, my bottom line with him was, "Sir, you lose that pub. You sell that pub. Whatever happens to that pub, you're not going down." I go, "I'm going down, and Seaman, I won't say his name, is going down." I was the only one who challenged the captain. I became the golden boy because the captain knew what he had in me. He knew he had somebody who didn't care who the person on the other end was, but that I would do what was right, what was legal. And damn the torpedoes if somebody wanted to take it out on me, in this case specifically. It wasn't the first time I've stood up to captains, not because I'm an a-hole. It's because I believe in fairness. I believe that you don't mistreat people. I believe that in holding people accountable for the responsibility they say they're taking, and they're aware of the consequences. Well, this young woman, Hannah Gutierrez Reed, was not. Her responsibilities are safety, ensuring that all firearms are handled safely on the set. Maintenance, maintaining and repairing the firearms. Training, providing training and guidance to actors on safely handling firearms. This is where they fail. And you can tell me, well, the actors are arrogant, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. She has a job. And if that actor doesn't respect that job, she needs to make sure they do. And if that actor gets that person fired, then sue them. Life's not fair. And to keep your integrity, you may have to go above and beyond, including what I just said, taking legal action. But now this young woman's going to spend time in prison and has to live with a nightmare that she murdered somebody. It doesn't matter if she didn't pull the trigger. Had she done her job, that person would be alive. She murdered him along with others. Compliance, making sure that the use of firearms complies with all legal requirements and film set regulations. This is where she failed again. Coordination, working closely with director, prop master, stunt coordinator to ensure the firearms are used correctly and safely. She failed there. That moron, Alec Baldwin, should not have been given that gun until the scene was ready to be shot, until seconds before that director is going to go, whatever they say. I'm thinking cut, but that's what they use to end it. But that's the seriousness with, because some civilians go screw yourself, William. That's not how it's done. That's how it's supposed to be done. That's how it should be done. That's how people live. But William, it happened so rarely. Well, you go tell that to the parents of John Eric Hexham when it happened in 1984 or 83. You go tell it to this young woman's family, Helena Hutchins. You know, blows my mind. You know, Democrats always say that every life, every life, every life, until it's something on their end. Well, it's a greater good. When you have integrity, there are lines in the sand you don't cross. Progressives in this country and the Democratic Party and the rhino elites don't. So what was Hannah Gutierrez Reed's role? Well, according to my notes here, Baldwin's pistol should have contained only dummy rounds. But she loaded a live bullet in it. And the gun obviously fired, killing Helena Hutchins and seriously injuring an individual named Joel Souza. He got it in the shoulder. Her job was to ensure, again, all firearms are safe. Prosecutors argue that she failed to follow the essential safety procedures and that her work was sloppy. The end result, you don't even have to research. That's a given. There's a crew member, Ad Diego, who's also suing Baldwin, but he testified and described her as less professional than other armorers he had worked with, and firearms were left insecure. And there's a reason for that. Nepotism. Young girl, didn't have the experience. Things rarely happen like that. Doesn't think it's ever going to happen to her. Hannah Reed Gutierrez, or is it Hannah Gutierrez Reed? What's his name? Hannah Gutierrez Reed got the job because of her daddy, Thel Reed, a stuntman who worked on Tombstone, 310 to Yuma, and LA Confidential. And according to my research, he's also an armorer. So she got her job because of daddy-o. Come here, you're going to love my little girl. Yeah. You know, as somebody dies. The trial pretty much dealt with the sloppiness and how there was no detail to safety. And by failing to follow industry practices, she brought six live rounds, they determined, onto the set. Didn't discover them until 12 days later. I don't know what all that means, but the point is she brought live rounds to the set, forgot where they were at, and lost them for a dozen days. And here's another one that's not her fault, but she should have held her ground. They were trying to shoot this movie as fast as possible for budget reasons. Safety had become secondary because of the production's, quote, ludicrous speeds, unquote. Work conditions led to several crew members walking off the set. Gun safety had also been a complaint on the set. I mean, it's the telltale signs were there. The warning signs were there. And because she's a young, immature, silver spoon, armorer elitist, that daddy got the job. She didn't care enough to do her job. At the end of the day, people, you're given this job. It's based off the fact that you know what needs to be done to succeed. Firearms weren't secured. A Diego witnessed the shooting. He's also suing Alec Baldwin, the individual who actually murdered Hutchins. Allegedly murdered. Actually, he did murder her, but they'll probably reduce it down to manslaughter, and as it should be. I say murder, but it's technically manslaughter. He didn't mean to kill her, but his incompetence is what killed her. I have something right here. The Hutchins family is also suing Baldwin, and they got Gloria Allred as their lawyer. If y'all don't know who Gloria Allred is, she's a beast. A vile human being, as I like to say, because she mixes half-truth with truth to create a perception that's helped her take down many clients. In fact, those half-truths mixed in to create a false narrative, a perception with a tinge of truth, usually ends up with settling out of court. Okay, so the verdict, the jury deliberated for less than 3 hours. The fact that it took close to 3 hours is a shocker. There was 2 weeks of testimony. Jurors concluded that Gutierrez Reed had willful disregard for the safety of the others, and that led Hutchins' team to their death for her failure to check the round to the firearm. Now, she was acquitted of tampering with evidence, but still faces up to 18 months of prison. She should serve the full 18 months, period. That's a short time in a young person's life of 60, 70, 80 years, 90 years. And I say that because her actions directly led to the death of an innocent human being. No sentencing has been yet. And this is just the first of many, or not many, but the first of others. Alec Baldwin set to face his it's a manslaughter trial. I did research, forgot. And his story, they say, is already filled with holes. He states he cocked the gun. But according to an FBI expert, Baldwin's revolver arrived at an FBI laboratory fully functional with safety features. For the gun to fire without pulling the trigger, he had to strike it with a mallet. Bam! And break it. Independent firearms expert Lucien Hogg backed the FBI's claims, testing that he had seen no evidence that the gun had been modified before the FBI tested it. There are also time issues. They were working at speeds that purposely ignored safety. Again, it's a budget issue. They want to shoot, boom, boom, boom. That's how movies are done today. There's so much streaming, so much crap out there, and there's so much jobs. Now, the pay is much less than it was back in the heyday. And that's another reason why these actors, my generation and on, the older, the generation ahead of mine and about up to my generation, maybe a generation earlier, they're accustomed to certain pay, certain types of royalties, certain types of perks. All that's gone now. Get in, do the movie, get out, do your next one. That's how life kind of works. And the budget, they were forcing this to all move quickly. And that's likely to doom him based on testimony from this trial and the fact Adiego and others are suing you, using that as part of the reason for the death. So, another individual named Dave Hawes has already served probation after taking a plea deal. He is the assistant director and safety coordinator. And he testified that Gutierrez Reed had been diligent in her work and that he took responsibility for the shooting because he hadn't checked the weapon last. Well, God bless that guy for wanting to be the fall guy. But it turns out it wasn't enough, which means there were holes in the story. This story is not over, and we will come back to it and to make sure you're informed. But the truth of the matter is, Alec Baldwin, because of his ignorant actions, should be found guilty of manslaughter. There's a saying that there's no ignorance of the law or something to that effect. So let's move on to our next story. Ms. J.K. Rowling reported to the police. Now, I'm not a Harry Potter fan. It came after I was already an adult. And, you know, the thing about Harry Potter, it's geared towards little kids as well as young adults. And it's a whole wide world. Cool. I think it's made her a billionaire. You know, I'm not sure. But she's a wealthy woman. Let's see here. Is J.K. is J.K. Rowling a millionaire? I have one of these split keyboards because I'm a gamer. But when I have the mic here right in between, I got to go around. Oh, I said millionaire. Let's see. No, I meant billionaire. Let's see. I think she is to be that wealthy, man. That just shows the power of her characters, the magic she created. Yes, her estimated net worth stands at a staggering $1 billion as of June 2023. God bless her. You know, of course, she's become a target. However, she's also rich enough where it doesn't matter. But that's not why she's standing up for herself. J.K. Rowling is standing up for herself against people just spreading false narratives and lies regarding transgenderism because she's her own boss. She built her empire. She doesn't work for anybody. She wasn't made by anybody. She's not at one of the network shows where they have to come in, call her, apologize, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So she's like, screw you. You know, so there's this man named India Willoughby, a transgender. It's a broadcaster, India Willoughby. She reported J.K. Rowling to the Northumbria police for alleged transphobia, claiming Rowling misgendered her online. Now, the Brits don't have free speech. Honestly, they're not our special allies, neighbors, fam, whatever. They're nothing but a punk-ass, woke country who was willing to jail conservatives for political ideological gain, and their conservative party doesn't care. Rides on with it. I mean, Boris Johnson. You know, y'all talk about Trump. Trump actually gave us the greatest economy and the lowest unemployment and did more for minorities than any president in my lifetime. That's not conjecture. That's fact. Boris Johnson is the ultimate joke, having failed as prime minister. But I digress. Rowling called her a man on social media as Willoughby is legally a woman. So I apologize, Willoughby. I do have a rule. If you have... Oh, I'm not apologizing. I will acknowledge a transgender as their gender if they transition. You're not a woman until you transition. So until then, you are a man, legally and biologically. Well, legally, there's a name, a gender on a piece of paper. No, I'm talking about you drop those drawers, fool. Now, there are true exceptions to it. When I say true exceptions, hermaphrodites, I think that's how you pronounce it. But there's also, here's something you may not know. People, transgenders, for lack of a different word, some of them, you know, they're born, say, a male on the outside, but with some female stuff inside. There are newborns who undergo surgery, not at their newborn, but probably later on, but still as babies, to fix that, you know. However, you get the hormone issue. I mean, it's a complicated issue. There are true transgenders out there. The point is it's not like what they're trying to claim now. And if you're transgender and you're one of these types, you're a true transgender, you should be angry at what pedophiles are trying to do to the extreme small minuscule number that are seen as true transgender. Because I know one. Individual explained to me their whole life. And it's like you could see it happening. And this person was a pillar of the community. Just couldn't live with him. Himself anymore in that sense. And that person has transitioned. We're not friends, actually. I don't care for the person. Not because the individual is a transgender. It's because I don't agree with how we look at things ideologically and carrying out trying to change people's minds. I want to change people's minds. They just want a selfie. Anyway. So you may not know, you know, I don't know if this India Willoughby is how she falls, but I don't care. She has made it a personal issue to stalk J.K. Rowling online and make herself the herself, whatever. If Willoughby's transitioned, then yes, make herself the victim. So who is India Willoughby? India Willoughby is a transgender woman known for being Britain's first transgender national television newsreader. The first transgender co-host of an all-woman talk show, Loose Women on ITV. She has fully transitioned. So India Willoughby is, yes, indeed, a woman. And I think what's probably happened here is she's J.K. Rowling's just sick of her stalking her and trying to use the laws to silence a political enemy that Willoughby doesn't like. See, this is what I'm talking about, these laws. First of all, they're not used fairly. So, for example, here in America, there are no hate crimes against, say, Black Americans who do hate towards whites, but yet it's only white. My first question as a child to my father when the first gay hate crime laws came out, I said, "Dad, so what happens?" Actually, I called him Papa. Papa, what happens if a bunch of gay guys beat up a straight guy or somebody who isn't gay? I didn't know how to discern back then, but somebody who isn't gay. He just looked at me, couldn't really answer. He goes, "Well, we'll have to find out. But yes, by law, that can happen, but it doesn't." And this is what this Willoughby and all others, same thing with England. They do the same thing over there. They're not going to look at her, "Well, India Willoughby, you are online stalking. That is against the law." No, they're going to look indifferently on that. On the flip side, it's going to be hard to catch J.K. Rowling. She's a billionaire. She can flee the country or do whatever. But we have these silly laws willing to imprison people. Yet they let the terrorists go. They let people who assault others go. Why? Because of wokeness. Let's get back to Willoughby. The legal implications. Willoughby believes this is a breach, what J.K. Rowling did, of both the Equalities Act and the Gender Recognition Act. She wants Rowling to be charged with a hate crime. This is, again, just another bigoted law abused and purposely set to curb free speech and imprison those who politically disagree with you. It's also, that's what I just said. However, per Rowling, no law compels anyone to pretend to believe that India is a woman because of the four-stater ruling. The four-stater ruling is a legal decision that upheld Maya Forstater's right to express her gender-critical beliefs, which the Employment Appeal Tribunal recognized as protected under the UK's Equality Act. So, in essence, the case affirmed that such beliefs, while protected, do not grant the right to discriminate against transgender individuals. That's how Willoughby looks at it. That despite the fact that the force, that her beliefs, not Willoughby's, but Rowling's, are protected, they don't grant her the right to discriminate against transgender individuals. So, Rowling's response, J.K. Rowling said she consulted a lawyer and argued that her gender-critical views are legally protected. She denies any obligation to recognize Willoughby as a woman. She should. I'm on Rowling's side based off the overall bigger picture here. But in this case, if she has transitioned, she's a woman. But this is very gray. So many layers here. Especially at the fact that it's obvious, my research has proven, I'm not going to talk about it, but that Willoughby is a stalker. She has stalked Rowling's for months and months and months. So, Rowling consulted a lawyer. She argued that her gender-critical views are legally protected. She denies any obligation to recognize Willoughby as a woman. And she believes and states that transgenders demand our freedom of speech be taken unless we accept men who say they are women, and then allow those men to proliferate spaces reserved for women, like locker rooms, bathrooms, prisons. And she's absolutely right. They want to stop us from just even talking about it. So heaven forbid, because it's happening a lot, at least once a week right now, they are arresting, say, for example, these transgender men who are raping and abusing young men, young kids. So, they want our freedom of speech taken unless we accept that men who say they are women and then let them be able to enter spaces reserved for women, children's bathroom. Now, people have said, "Look, J.K. Rowling's going to lose it at all if she don't get on board with us Germany acolytes from the 1930s." But that's not true. Warner Brothers just came out and said they're excited about working with her on a new Harry Potter series for Max, David Zaslav. or Zaslav. I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm not going to look up every damn name to pronounce it. But anyway, she's still raking it in. She's winning her battle. She's smart enough to consult with lawyers probably before she tweets certain things. And the truth of the matter is, because she is so good at this, defending herself, defending women and their rights, and going blow to blow and knocking these transgenders out who want to destroy her career because of hate. You know, they hate her. God bless J.K. Rowling. I've never read a Harry Potter book, never contributed a dime to her. I never will. But we align on this. All right, let's move on over to some quick hits. Porky Star dead. Rest in peace, Tony Ganos. Actor Tony Ganos is dead at 64. Now, he died a couple of weeks ago. His fiance Amanda Serrano Ganos confirmed his passing on next Tuesday. If it's a fiance, why didn't she have the last name? Maybe she took it beforehand. Who knows? I don't know. But nobody knows Ganos in terms if you're younger than I am. Tony Ganos' mug was massively big in the 80s. He wasn't famous. He was a B actor, meaning he played the supporting type roles. But he was in some big films of the times in the 70s and 80s. The Wanderers, he played Perry, and later it appeared in Continental Divide. Wasn't a big career, so he wasn't really able to move past the B status. But that's where he began his acting career. But he was really famous for one of the biggest movies of my era. His claim to fame, his most notable role was Meat in the Porky series, which became a hit and had two sequels. So he made his money. You know, you're in sequels, they get royalties. So he, you know, he probably did well enough to have some income there to make his life nice and to keep his acting career going. Porky's, before we get to Porky's, his later work, he was in Die Hard 2, TV shows like Scarecrow and Mrs. King. I think that was a show from the 90s. It was Kate Jackson from Charlie's Angels, probably 80s and 90s, with Bruce Boxleitner. And his last film was Rising Sun in 1993. So, you know, short career, but it's what I tell people, you know. We look at our life and we look at certain things in life. If he can look back at, he could have looked back at his life. Look, I was a big thing in the 90s. I had my moment. It's not that you look at it from that perspective as much as like, yeah, I had an impact. Yeah, a bit of a legacy is what I'm trying to say. And Porky's was of the era of the raunchy America, where TNA was being shown on screens. And that was my prepubescent into teen years, starting in the 70s into the 80s. And it kind of died off in the late 80s, I imagine, early 90s. You should probably still see a few movies here and there. But for the most part, they've rightfully taken it out. Look, to you young guys, you prepubescent teens, you teenagers, the imagination is the greatest sexual organ. When there's something you can't have and can't touch. That's why I never went to, you know, put the money parlor. Oh, my God. Well, you know, where the women dance. I was a cheap bastard. I'm like, I don't make enough money to be giving my money away to a woman I'm never going to go sleep with. You know, and it's the imagination, though. When you see some of these women strippers, it's like, ugh. Yeah, it's like looking at a penis. Ooh, that's not the most pretty thing to look at. Same thing with a vagina. Oh, it's not the most pretty thing to look at. But you have the imagination, the romance of it. You know, and when they started showing all this stuff on screen, it kind of took that away. So maybe call me old school, but to men, it makes you a better lover. Trust me, it does. It's so good. You let your imagination go. That's about, I guess, the best way I can say it. And Porky's was one of the scenes that ended it. In fact, that Kim Cattrall was in it. I think she had a nude scene in there. I haven't seen Porky's since the 90s, you know. But his career ended in 1993. the one thing, too, I want to point out in the 80s, you know, the 80s, 90s, mostly 80s, my generation is considered, statistically speaking, the bingiest drinking generation. I mean, we were boozers, massive, massive boozers. Our era was also the era where the drinking age went up at the 21 in most states. You know, so It was, we also had, we had the best of times and the worst of times. And again, the era of heavy TNA movies and high school topics and sex, drinking, drugs, that was at the foremost. The Bad Boy, that was in. You know, it was actually, the Bad Boy's always been in since the 50s. So I take that back. But TNA and drinking and all that. So he was famous for Porky's, the movie I've been talking about. Porky's is known for its raunchy humor and became a classic of the teen sex comedy genre, spawning sequels and influencing future films in the genre. I don't know where I got that from or if I wrote it. But the movie was an unexpected hit. It became one of the highest grossing movies in 1992. It cost between 4 to 5 million, made over 160 million. Oh my God. Even using the three times profit, fine size, these 15. Oh my God. It made $145 million profit, and back then, that's probably about 300, 400 million today. Who knows? It had two sequels: 1983's Porky's 2, The Next Day, and 1985's Porky's Revenge. These are not classic, you know, Oscar-worthy movies, but they were movies that made a lot of money. And I'll tell you this: Hollywood will take a movie that's not critically acclaimed over a critically acclaimed Oscar-winning movie any day of the week if it's a movie that makes the type of money that Porky's did. So let's get to the setting of the movie. The film is set in 1954 at a beach in at a high school in Florida, near a swamp. You know, I remember some of those scenes. So think of where the Florida Gators are at in terms of the university, in terms of what it represents. Or maybe I'm not. I can't remember. Take all that back. But high school in Florida. The plot. Here's where the plot's TNA. A group of high school boys are on a quest to lose their virginity. They encounter various comedic and sexual escapades along the way. The boys visit Porky's. It's a notorious nightclub in the Everglades. That's why I said the swamp. It's in the Everglades, hoping to hire a prostitute. And again, they want to lose their virginity. The club's owner, Porky, humiliates the boys and takes their money, leading to a feud. And after one of their own is beating, the boys plot revenge against Porky and his brother, Sheriff. The boys manage to sink Porky's establishment into the swamp and escape its retribution with the help of local law enforcement. So you have a movie about TNA, sex, losing virginity. Think about it, guys, girls. What would the term meat mean? Of course, the man had a giant schlong, penis, monster, cock, whatever you want to call it. But that was what the role Tony Gagnos played. His character was called Meat. And he's a big guy, muscular, decent looking guy. So, you know, fit the complete stereotype of the big man on campus type role. He wasn't the big man on campus, actually, a secondary role in the movie, too. I mean, he wasn't one of the top dogs in the movie, but he was part of the little gang there. You know, so God bless him. He lived the American dream. He left his legacy in the form of Porky's. And much love to you, Tony Gagnos, as you begin your next journey and adventure. We will all join you one day. You've just been given a head start. God bless. All right, let's move on to. I want to close it out. Let me find it here. It's an article, and it's an older article. I want to say for like 2009, but it's called "Half of All Friends Replaced Every 7 Years." It's at the website Life Science. So the article discusses the study and how people's social networks change over time, and the research is part of the project where friends are made. Contact or where friends are made, contacts, consequences. It's set up by Beate Volcker. I'm not sure how to spell that. I mean, say that Beate Volker with the O having the two dots on top. Yes, I'm showing my ignorance here. I apologize. This research was done in 2009 against a previous study. Against a previous study, meaning the other study was saying something differently. So we're still learning about this today. Other studies have gone out. I plan on personally researching this to see where it's at now today. But the reason I want to talk about it is I've talked to friends. I've looked at my life. I'm like, oh my God, yes, it's true. So the study, a survey of 1,007 people ages 18 to 65 was done. Then they contacted the participants 7 years later. 604 people were re-interviewed. imagine some of the 65 and plus probably weren't around. Some of the survey questions: who do you talk with regarding personal issues? Who helps you with do-it-yourself in your home? Who do you pop by to see? Where do you get to know that person? And where do you meet that person now? So, despite gaining more Facebook friends over the years, the number of close friends remains stable. And that's true. For me, it's probably less. I've got like 600 people who are so-called friends. I can whack about 550 of them. Really, I couldn't. It has nothing to do with me not liking them. I don't even recognize some of the names because they're more acquaintances you meet, say, at conventions, seminars, trade shows, things like that. You know, but technically, per the study, you lose half and replace them with new ones. So despite gaining more Facebook friends over the years, the number of close friends remains stable. But you do lose half of them and replace them with new ones. I was just talking to somebody who I call Madam Chair, and we were closer 7 years ago. I'd go over her place, cigar, et cetera, with her and her husband and some of her friends. Now I don't get a call unless I contact her. That's not on her. I was the one who drifted apart. You know, so that's just an example. That's how things happen. And I don't regret or don't look down on it. By understanding, you can easily move on. I remember when I was young, I was pissed off this guy and I weren't friends anymore because I hadn't done nothing, you know, to him. He had moved on. That's how it works. Friendship dynamics. And I'm also a hard person to get along with. Friendship dynamics. About half of your close friends are replaced with new ones every 7 years. 30% of discussion partners and practical helpers are still around. So in essence, people who you tell secrets with, hey, or you not tell secrets, I always go down to the worst of the lot. But people you just have conversation with, that you have real conversations with, along with somebody, hey, Joe, can you help me get this done? I'm going to chop a tree down, you know, or I need some help with the car, etc. Those, about 30% of those people stick around. Influence of context. A study suggests that the context in which we meet people significantly influences our social networks. So what's that mean? That means I'm going to meet more friends in the political world the last 10 years than I ever will from the fantasy world. Of course, from 1990 until about 2010. From 1990 to 2015, which is purely fantasy sports and sports industry people for me. Now it's more political. But I am getting to the sports world, as you can see with our new website, Grumblings Media. So it'll probably be a mixture now. But you get my point. But that influences our social networks, who we make friends with, you know, who we hang out with, et cetera, et cetera. Personal choice versus opportunity. While personal preference plays a role, our choices are limited by the opportunities to meet new people. Again, for me, it's the political world. Family and friends, I still meet a few new ones when I go back to Panama. But mostly work. Your work will derive a lot of your friendships. Personal choices don't always drive friendships, i.e. opportunities to meet limit our friends' choices. For example, work. That's what I wrote down what I just said. God, I need to learn to follow my outline better. Okay, so this research highlights the fluid nature of friendships and the factors contributing to forming our social circles. It's just a fun little tidbit. Take a look at your life the past 7 years. Look at people you haven't spoken to for 7 years and look at how long you were friends with them in that time frame. And that's it. There you have it, my friends. I hope you enjoyed my vicious take, because stupidity and death is the worst lot you can live with. In terms of the Rush Armor, J.K. Rowling, you must follow her on Twitter, or X rather, if you don't. She does not sugarcoat it. Some of the quick hits to my friends my age. Yeah, you remember Porky's. Of course, I'm not going to pull those movies out to watch them. Sometimes I have a rule I always ignore but won't with this one. Do not revisit childhood dreams, because it's never the same. Take Saturday morning television, Ultraman. I love that show. Now I'm looking at a bad acting, bad sets, and a guy in a rubber suit with miniature cities, miniature mountains and landscapes. And the half of friends replaced. That's just a fun little, you know what that's good for, people? That's a good story to be telling at parties. And that's it. There you have it, my friends. Do not forget, you can catch this show, Grumblings, or this show, Red, White, and Rude, at grumblingsmedia.com, along with our sports podcast and our political podcast as well. Hey, and I'm not going to sugarcoat this. If you're into basketball, we are going to be coming out with our own full NBA podcast. You'll enjoy that. We'll keep you in the loop. So you can also find us at YouTube and Rumble under the profile Grumblings Media, as well as traditional podcast outlets, Google, Apple, Spotify, y Pandora. So until next time, my friends, I am William Del Pilar, and I bid you adieu.